win one for Sean Payton. Yes, indeed. Out of every bad thing, there's always a silver lining, and he got it at the owners' meetings. More on March Madness, more on the Michigan State Spartans. We'll go to a beat reporter of the Spartans coming up. Plus, from New Iberia to LSU, Lionel Tree Green was a great one. We'll catch up with the former New Iberian, and we'll pick the Sweet 16. That, along with just who is the MVP and the Rookie of the Year in the NBA. We got a busy show planned for you and yours today, Wednesday, March 27th, 2019.
LeBron one-on-one with Satoransky on the right wing. Dribbles right by him. Lay it up and in. Timeout, Washington. Lakers up 15.
Isaac looked at three. Won't take it. Down low right baseline. They go to AG. He scoops it back out to Vooch for three. It's up on the way. It's in. Nick Vucevic triple right between the eyes. Timeout, Miami. 5:56 left in the game. Orlando leads by 7, 91-84.
Check the out-of-town scoreboard here in a second, Jonesy, see if there are any games impacting the Raptors that we can let folks know about. Norm Powell, triple up and in, busted. Looking smooth on that one. One more. People are getting Mickey D's. Raptors 11 of 26.
From another night in the association, as tick-tock, tick-tock, we're getting closer and closer to the end of the regular season. And then the real fun begins, the playoffs. Yes, indeed. Good afternoon, Acadiana, and welcome. Jordy Hultberg here, CD, in the Master Control Suite. In the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB 1037 The Game. You got us from 2 to 4 each and every day, Monday through Friday, and we're thankful and appreciative that you have joined us. Sean Payton, everywhere he went, vacations, wherever he went, the topic never, ever stopped. Opinions, sympathies about the NOLA no-call. Well, Payton's ecstatic now because the NFL owners passed a rule that will effectively prevent such a mistake from happening to another team in the future. Starting in the 2019 season, coaches and a replay official will be allowed to challenge called and non-called pass interference penalties like the one Nickel Roby Coleman levied on wide receiver Tommy Lee Lewis in those dreaded final minutes of the NFC Championship game. It's hard to believe it's been 2 months ago. Seems like it's been 12 years ago. According to the new rule, passed by a 31-1, which one owner didn't vote for it? I guess the owner of the Rams. That's the only one I can think of. Coaches will be allowed to challenge the calls and non-calls at any point in the game except the final 2 minutes. And during those final 2 minutes, a replay official will assume the responsibility of challenging those calls or non-calls. The change ratified on a one-year trial basis. Sean Payton lost the battle, but Sean Payton won the war. Won the war. Plain and simple. Kind of an upset when you think about it. I mean, everybody that you talk to that is a, quote, insider of the NFL thought it would take at least another year of research to affect change. That's how the NFL operates. They are never quick to make a change. That it happened so quickly, you got to credit the persuasive powers of Sean Payton and his fellow coaches who united behind the cause and lobbied owners apparently hard for hours on Monday. So there you go. Congratulations to Sean Payton. Meanwhile, on the field, we all think that the Saints got a little bit better because they got one of their target positions and they got a good one in Jared Cook. Here is Sean Payton. After he was talking about the rule change, he talked about somebody he really likes, his new tight end.
I think, you know, it gives us a threat opposite of Mike. You know, a lot of times where Mike lines up is opposite the tight end. We feel like we've got some good tight ends in the building that, you know, that we have roles and visions for. But I think Jared's got a unique skill set, and we saw a lot of good tape of him.
Saw a lot of good tape. Can't wait to see what they do with him. A pass-catching tight end. But look, so that's good news, and Sean Payton deserves a ton of credit for the rule change. Yeah, he lost the battle in January, but he won the war on Tuesday. And I think part of his legacy will be the rule change that was enacted yesterday to improve the NFL game. Plain and simple. He was on a crusade to right the wrong of the NOLA no-call. And he did it with diligence and perseverance. And I just love me some Sean Payton. I really, truly do. So that's a good thing. A bad thing, LSU baseball can't hit. Two zip. Look, no offense to our friends West in Lake Charles, Louisiana, McNeese State. That's great. They beat LSU 2-0. My goodness gracious. Can't hit out of a wet paper bag. Cause for concern. Cause for concern. Pitching was okay. Several seldom used arms stepped up so that LSU could preserve their top arms for the series against Mississippi State. But the bats were anemic. They collected only four hits all night, failed to put up a run. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. LSU's offense is suffering. And if they don't get it going soon, somebody get it going soon, because like anything else, somebody gets hot, it gets contagious. This could be a long season for LSU. It could be embarrassing against Mississippi State, a team that's ranked number two in the nation, and they've scored 53 runs in their last four games. 53. LSU hadn't scored hardly anything. So there is something, and let me just tell you what my viewpoint on this is. Number one, I don't think they're handling the pitchers right. I don't know what their practice regimen is. They got too many arms that are burned out and hurt. They got to change their ways there. And I love Paul Maneri. He's a great friend. But they're too nice. It's like a country club atmosphere over there. They got no dogs on that team. Not a one. You got to crack the whip on these guys because they are soft. Plain and simple, they are soft. LSU left seven men on base, were just 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position. They got no dogs right now. They just don't. Plain and simple. And it could get ugly against Mississippi State for that Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. First pitch Thursday, as Clint said, 6 o'clock. Pre-game show, 5:30. They better get their act together. This was a preseason number one. They ain't even close. They are not even close. Not yet. Not right now. That's not to say that they can't turn it around. But right here, right now, they've got no confidence. They've got no leadership. And they are soft as Charmin. Plain and simple. All right, let me tell you what's coming up on the show today. We're going to head out to Michigan. Chris Solari covers the Michigan State Spartans for the Detroit Free Press. We're going to get the latest lowdown on Tom Izzo's Spartans. Michael Hugin of The Athletic will go through the Sweet 16, and he'll make his picks in this hour. Hour number two, we always start with the always popular and fun hot topics. I can't wait to talk to my buddy Lionel Tree Green, the former LSU Tiger from the lovely city of New Iberia. What a competitor he was. 6'9", thin as a rail, 6'9", about 200, but tough, I mean, tough as nails. What a great player. We'll catch up with Tree, and then we'll talk with Grant Hughes of Bleacher Report. Who the heck is the MVP of the NBA? They met last night, the two contenders, James Harden and Giannis Antetokounmpo. We'll find out his thoughts. And who's the rookie of the year? We saw Trae Young put up big numbers in another loss. I love it. Keep losing, Pelicans. Keep losing, baby. You let the Hawks beat you. I love it. Way to go. Way to go, Alvin Gentry. And is it Trae Young? Is it Luka Doncic? So we'll get those stories. Busy day planned for you and yours. It is a Chamber of Commerce day in Acadiana. Thank you so much for being here. CD's going to take us to break with some good tunes. And then we're talking NCAA basketball. Michigan State next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, I don't know how much longer I can wait. I got to get to Friday, man. I got to get to Friday. It's 6:09 Central Time in Washington, D.C. Got to get to this Sweet 16 game between the two SUs, and they follow one another in the alphabet, LSU, MSU, the Tigers and the Spartans in the round of with 16 teams left to go. I'm really looking forward to talking to our next guest. He does a tremendous job for the Detroit Free Press. He follows the Spartans on a day-to-day basis, and that is Chris Solari. And Chris is kind enough to join us. How are you, my friend? Great talking to you.
I'm doing good. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing terrific. How much are you looking forward to this game? I know Michigan's the big rival and all that, but man, this could be a really good college basketball game.
Yeah, it really could, and I'm looking forward to it simply because it seems like it's been an eternity since we've actually watched and covered a basketball game after that stretch that we went through where we had 3-3 days in Chicago and then a quick turnaround down to Des Moines. And two games there. So it feels like a lifetime ago that I covered a game, to be honest with you. But I think these two teams are going to be an interesting matchup, and it'll be really curious to see just, you know, how much that inside presence of LSU, whether it can make an effect, I think, between the wings and the bigs in terms of getting Michigan State into foul trouble. Because right now, just with the depth that Michigan State lacks, I think that's going to be – they've done a good job of staying out of foul trouble, but I think that's going to be critical on Friday.
Chris, LSU's yet to play a 40-minute game, so I don't think they've played their best basketball yet. Where is Michigan State on the level of reaching their full potential?
Well, that's a good question because, I mean, it feels like this season has been segmented up into so almost multiple teams. I mean – you know, yeah. There was the early part of the year when they had Joshua Langford healthy, then he went down right before January, at the end of December. So they had to reinvent themselves then, and Kyle Arnes got hurt, and he was in and out, and then Nick Ward got hurt, so they had to reinvent again. So it's kind of hard to even really say. I mean, this group, I think the best game that the active group right now has played probably would have been that Michigan game. In the Big Ten championship game, okay. Where they rallied to come back, but it wasn't really a complete game. I mean, they fell down early, and then Kyle Arnes got hurt, and he's most likely going to be done for the year with that ankle sprain. But, you know, the reality is that they had to reinvent themselves again at that point. So, you know, that you saw a little bit of struggles against Bradley with how limited they are in the wing. And, you know, that was the big thing with Aaron Henry is, you know, to me, I think Tom Izzo realizes he needs to demand a lot out of a freshman in this position because he has no one behind him. But then they come out in the Minnesota game and play well offensively and blitz them, but then are turning the ball over a lot. So, you know, I don't think they're quite there at their most complete game. But, okay. I mean, they've had spurts where they've played really well.
Friday night, Capital, I always call it the Verizon Center. It's the Capital One Arena in Washington, so I got to get used to that. Chris Solari, Detroit Free Press. I love the matchup of the point guards, Tremont Waters, Cassius Winston. LSU's strength is turning teams over. They're one of the better teams at getting in passing lanes and stealing balls and getting out in transition, and that's been a weak spot for Michigan State this year, hasn't it?
Well, especially against bigger teams. And it's been kind of a weird dynamic. Is they will have games Like the Michigan, they in three games against Michigan, who has a pretty good defense, they turned the ball over 28 times combined in three games. And then they turned the ball over 22 times against Minnesota, 24 against Texas, 24 against Illinois. I mean, they've had a number of games where they've been in the single digits for turnovers. They've had those 3-20, you know, where they're over 20, and they've had a couple games where they're, you know, around 15 or a little north of that. So it's been up and down. A lot of it depends on what you're going to see. I think, you know, the turnovers against Minnesota, you know, some of those were offensive charges. A couple of them were moving screens. So that gets a little bit, you know, when you start seeing those, yeah, they count as turnovers. They're not necessarily the same kind of turnovers as the bad passes or the stuff that ends up becoming a breakaway the other way. And that, to me, is what they need to avoid. They need to avoid those turnovers that turn into buckets the other way and momentum swinging transition plays.
He is Chris Solari, Detroit Free Press. We talk about Winston and how effective he is, and the same thing goes with Tremont Waters. You bump the ball in his hand to do things. But I think the glue for LSU is Skylar Mays. Who's that other player that you look at for Michigan State? Man, when he plays well, this is a tough team to beat.
Well, I think it's Matt McQuaid because I think, you know, you could probably split hairs whether it's Matt McQuaid or Kenny Goins, but to me, Matt McQuaid, especially in this matchup, defensively needs to be the guy. Because I was, you know, he'll end up being matched up on Waters, and he's got that 6'5 lengthy reach, and you know he's the most apt to take a charge. But then when he gets hot from outside, he makes them a little different of a team. Then you have to guard the perimeter a little bit more, and that's when Winston can get inside and kill you. And Goins, I think, is another guy. You know, when you got a stretch four like that, he's really turned himself into a shooter. You know, when his shots are falling, he's kind of an X-factor difference maker. So I think, to me, though, I think McQuaid will be the one guy that they need to rely on. They really need to stay out of foul trouble as well.
Okay. Yeah, the same holds true for LSU and their bigs, Cabell Bigby Williams and Naz Reid. This is a big boy game on the glass. These teams typically, Tom Izzo's teams, always one of the best rebounding teams in the country. LSU, one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. It's going to be a battle down low, man. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be an area to keep an eye on, too. Michigan State's had their struggles at times keeping teams on the offense, off the offensive glass. So, you know, they've had moments when Michigan, which wasn't a great defensive or great offensive rebounding team, killed them with putback points in the first matchup. And they've had points where, for some reason or another, for as good as they're boxing out, and historically have been, and really have been for much this season, there are points where they have lapses on the defensive glass. So keep an eye on that. But, you know, that's where a guy like Xavier Tillman, who stepped in for Nick Ward in the starting lineup, is huge because he is a defensive presence, long wingspan, and a little bit better of an athlete than Nick Ward. But they're going to need Ward's body. I mean, he's got the big bulk, and they need him to get back to playing, you know, 18 minutes a game at least.
LSU plays eight. They're three coming off the bench. Javonte Smart, Emmett Williams, Darius Days have all been effective throughout the course of the year. When Tom Izzo looks to sub, how deep does he go?
At what point of the year? Now they're running
now.
On fumes now. I mean,
now.
Right now it's about six guys. I mean, Ward's coming off the bench, and then they use Gabe Brown and Foster Lawyer sparingly, and Thomas Kithier, the guy that they can use if the bigs get into fouls. So for the most part, I mean, you've got basically Winston McQuaid, Goins, and, you know, Aaron Henry now playing 30-plus a game. I mean, that's unheard of for Tom Izzo. He usually likes to rotate guys, but, you know, those injuries really have hampered what they can do on the wings, and they're already thin in the post. So those three guys, like I said, I mean, when they get into foul trouble, if they do get into foul trouble, you know, Kithier's a guy to keep an eye on, but he's thin. I mean, he's a freshman. He looks like a freshman. He's it's a good upside, but, you know, they're a little thin right now. And, you know, but he, you know, one thing that Izzo said and his players said is there's an implicit trust right now between the coaches and the players, and it's a two-way street. So that's how they've been getting it done.
That always helps. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Solari, ChrisSolari. LSU had trouble against Maryland, a fellow Big Ten team, when Maryland went with that 3-2 zone. I know Izzo's a man-to-man guy, but he's had a lot of time to prepare for this game. Do you foresee the man-to-man guy throwing up a zone here and there?
Let me tell you something. Every year we get in the preseason and we have that speculation that maybe this is the year Tom Izzo is going to break out of the zone, and it never happens.
Never.
No, he was mano a mano, hand-to-hand combat on the wing and in the post. He thrives on those challenges of making that switching man defense. And at times, that switching man can work like a zone and look like a zone, but he's mostly going to be a guy that sticks to that man-to-man. I mean, I can think of one possession in the last few years in an exhibition game where he played zone just as a tribute to Judd Heathcote, and that ended up in a bucket the other way. So,
why'd you have to bring up the late, great Judd Heathcote to me?
I know.
Why did you do that? Because they beat us pretty good at Market Square Arena back in 1979. Anyway, this is not your typical Tom Izzo kind of a team. They're more athletic. They got better shooters, it seems like to me. Am I crazy?
The shooting has been great the last couple of years. I think Winston's kind of been the catalyst of that. As his knees have been kind of bothering with tendonitis, I think he's, and the more minutes that he's taken, him and Kenny Gorenz, I think he's seen their production drop a little bit from the arc. But those two guys and McQuaid have given him pretty good shooting. And I mean, when Langford was healthy, he was one of those outside threats that you couldn't get away from. But that's what Gorenz has had to step up and make his difference. And, you know, after Langford went down, I think I hadn't charted it in a while, but Gorenz went from about a 35% shooter to shooting at one point around 50% from the arc between like January and late February. So,
wow.
You know, that's a guy that, you know, you talk about a junkyard dog. That guy's mostly been a rebounder, former walk-on. But he has turned himself into an offensive threat that if you don't scout him, he's gonna kill you on the wing when he steps out and pops on the fourth.
I'm not going to ask you for a winner. I'm just going to ask you, where do you see this game? You see this game in the 70s, the 60s? Where do you see it?
Yeah, I see it high 60s, low 70s. I think, you know, both of these teams like to muck it up on defense at times. But I think they also both like to get out and run a little bit on you. So there'll be some points, I think. You know, and I think it could end up being a one-possession game either way. I mean, I think these two teams right now are hungry, and they've both got their things that they want to prove right now. And, you know, I know Michigan State really wants to get another shot at Duke, but they know that they can't get to Duke if they don't win this game.
There you go. Chris Solari, Detroit Free Press. Enjoy the ball game. Safe travels to D.C. And thank you for your time, man. That was a lot of fun. I greatly enjoyed it.
Oh, anytime. You know, let me know when you ever need anything. And,
you got
I'll
it.
Be well.
You got
All
it,
right.
buddy. Thank
okay.
you so much. Chris Solari from Detroit. Yes, indeed. Chuck Woods, part of the world. How about that? All right, we'll take a timeout here. 16 teams left in it. 8 games between Thursday and Friday. Michael Hugonen of The Athletic joins us next. We're picking winners here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Sports Radio Update starts now.
Jeff's 5 games on the NBA docket tonight. One real good one, though, in Oklahoma.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Hugonen of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Well, without question, without doubt, the biggest storylines of the week are the Sweet 16 of the NCAA basketball tournament. Not only can he break down every football game known to mankind, but he has a great eye for college basketball as well. Michael Hugonen, this is a fun time, buddy. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing well. Tournament time is the best time of the year, but I have to admit, a little bit disappointed.
Chalk.
There's been so much chalk in this tournament. I mean, there's one team left that's seated above 5, and it's Oregon, and it's a power conference school.
Mm-hmm.
And when the only non-power conference schools are Gonzaga and Houston, it's hard to say Gonzaga is not a major college basketball program.
Yeah.
And frankly, it's hard to say that for Houston, too. I mean, there were some interesting first-round upsets.
We almost had with UCF. I feel so badly for them. Oh, my God.
That's the best game of the tournament so far. They played fearlessly. Aubrey Dawkins had a great game. Taco Fall is a legitimate game-changer. The problem with him, obviously, is he's still extremely raw and fouls way too often. But that was a great game. LSU has played some interesting games.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think you could argue that they easily could have lost in the first round, easily could have lost in the second round. And now they're sort of playing with house money, and I think that makes it tougher. Auburn should have lost in the first round but did not. But, yeah, it's, you know, Florida State did a phenomenal job basically shutting down John Morant, making him a non-entity. Texas Tech crushed a really good Buffalo team. Wofford, Kentucky, great game. And if Fletcher
great
McGee,
game.
Wofford's best player, had hit one three-pointer,
Simp.
Maybe that's totally different now.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, let's – we got 16 teams left, so we got 8 games to pick. So let's get busy. Let's start with Thursday's games. The first game up, number one-seeded Gonzaga against the fourth-seeded fighting Leonard Hamilton, Florida State Seminoles. What do you think?
Yeah, Florida State beat them last year. They physically manhandled Gonzaga. And I think if you're Gonzaga, yes, you have a lot of big guys, but these are not necessarily physical big guys. Now, I know Brandon Clark had a huge game against Baylor, and he needs a big game against FSU. So does Hachimura. So does the Tilly kid. Gonzaga is vastly better offensively. Florida State's vastly more physical, played a much tougher schedule the last couple months of the year. I still think Gonzaga wins that game. I think it'll be extremely close and extremely competitive and extremely entertaining.
All right. The Zags survive and advance. The second game on Thursday with a 6:29 tip, second-seeded Tennessee versus third-seeded Purdue. Purdue pretty darn good.
Yeah, Purdue's looked tremendous.
Wow.
Old Dominion plays a really good defense, and Purdue, I would argue, never truly was in trouble in the first round. And then Purdue treated Villanova like a 16 seed. I mean, that's Villanova, which had won two of the last three NCAA titles, and Purdue just stomped on them. So Carson Edwards is showing this kid's really, really good.
He really is.
And he proved in the second round. Isaac Harms, a big guy who's tough to defend. And Tennessee, that's another team that easily could have lost in the first round to Colgate and maybe should have lost to Iowa because they frittered away a huge lead. I think Purdue gets Tennessee. I think Purdue, Tennessee talks about how tough it is. I actually think Purdue is more physical and tougher, and I think that Tennessee is going to have all sorts of problems with Carson Edwards. Plus, I think Purdue is a higher IQ basketball team.
Yeah, they got size, too. That big fella, he makes it different for people, particularly on the offensive end. So, all right, so you've got Gonzaga and Purdue so far. Let's go to the nightcaps of Thursday. Second-seeded Michigan, third-seeded Texas Tech. I think this is a sneaky, good game.
Yes. I think it'll be extremely close. Two really good coaches. Everybody knows about John Beilein. I think more and more people are realizing Chris Beard is a high-level coach as well. Neither team is all that pretty offensively. Now, I would argue that Texas Tech has sort of hit its stride offensively of late. Michigan did a really nice job dismantling Florida's defense in the second half of their second-round game. I think that Culver is going to be the best player on the court, and I know Michigan has Zeke Simpson. I think Culver is really good. It's another kid, who's from Lubbock, stayed at home, is really good. I think Texas Tech's going to beat Michigan.
All right. I am in absolute agreement with you on this one. And then we have Virginia, who the number one seed, taking on the 12th-seeded Ducks from Oregon.
The thing about Virginia, they looked really ill at ease in the first round.
They did.
They let Gardner-Webb hang around for a half, and then they pulled away. And in the second round, Virginia really didn't have that much problems at all with Oklahoma. Oregon is extremely athletic. They have a rim protector and Peyton Pritchard. They have a point guard who causes issues. And I think Oregon is, again, here's a team that would not have been in the field if it had not won the Pac-12 tourney. here they are in the Sweet 16, the old playing with house money thing. And I think there's a ton of pressure on Virginia. I don't think there's any pressure at all on Oregon. But I still think Virginia's a better team.
I agree.
I think this game is decided in the first 10 minutes of the game. If Virginia isn't comfortable offensively in the first 10 minutes, and if they don't have a lead or at the 10-minute mark of the first half, I think they're in deep, deep trouble, and I think they're going to lose. Again, it's hard to fathom how a team can win the ACC and then look so basically scared in the first round against Gardner-Webb. I think there is that mental block there. Virginia is better. I think they win. But I think the key is the first 10 minutes of the game in this one. Virginia needs to come out and show we're not worried about anything. We're better than Oregon. We know we're better than Oregon. And here's the proof. But if they don't, if they mess around, this is going to be interesting.
I'm going with the Cavs on that one. All right, so now we come to Friday. And the first game out of the chute, nation's capital, Washington, D.C., second-seeded Michigan State, third-seeded LSU.
Yeah, again, LSU has not looked – they've not put together 40 minutes of good basketball.
That's true.
I would argue 20 minutes of high-level basketball, 5 or 6 minutes of good basketball, and about 14 of what are we doing out there basketball. Michigan State has an advantage in coaching. Izzo's one of the best coaches in the country. And I know LSU's got some big guys. I don't think they're as physical. Tremont Waters needs to play the game of his life. If he scores 25 or more, LSU's got a chance to pull the upset. But I think Michigan knows that as long as Waters doesn't go off, we're going to win. So I think Michigan State is going to win.
All right. Let's go to the Nightcap, another SEC team. When they're hot, they are really, really good. But how long can they continue to shoot the ball well? Fifth-seeded Auburn taking on number one-seeded North Carolina.
Another team, I don't know how New Mexico State did not win in the first round. Mystifying plays down the stretch. And then in the second round, Auburn treated Kansas like Kansas Wesleyan. And you're right. I mean, Auburn, when they're playing with all cylinders hitting, when they're hitting their threes, they almost look unbeatable. I mean, they're not. I get that. This is a team that lost 9 games and scuffled through part of the SEC schedule, but they are dangerous. The problem for Auburn is they want to play up-tempo. They want to run. The team on the other side of the court on Friday night is going to be the team that excels at that. I think North Carolina is a better team. I think North Carolina gets them. But I think if Auburn is hitting their threes, this could be a 91-89 kind of game.
I hope so.
10 years from now, you're going to remember, that Auburn-North Carolina game back in 2019 in the Sweet 16. Wow, that was an epic offensive game. There ain't going to be a lot of defense, but I think that this is going to be fun to watch, and I think North Carolina takes it.
I'm with you. All right, let's go to the Nightcaps. Duke had their reprieve. They were very, very, very fortunate to win against Central Florida, taking on another ACC team in Virginia Tech who beat Duke earlier in the season. They didn't have Zion at the time, but Duke and the Hokies, what do you think?
Yeah, Virginia Tech got stretched to the limit in the second round. Liberty played tough. Virginia Tech, and obviously these teams know each other extremely well, and Zion makes a gigantic difference. The Hokies need a big game from Kerry Blackshear. He's got to have a double-double. But I think you're right. I think Duke realizes, we're lucky in a way to be here. So let's take advantage. I think Duke does beat Virginia Tech.
Do you see another triangle in two and force Trey Jones to try and make a jump shot?
That's the thing. It's you look at Duke's players and you're like, why is this team so poor from the outside? Now, they did hit some key threes against UCF because UCF, like most teams that play Duke, were like, okay, we're not letting you get out in transition if we can do anything to stop it, and we're going to pack the lane to make it tougher for Zion to score. And Duke did make a couple of key three-pointers. Virginia Tech, you're not going to be surprised by anything Duke does. Buzz Williams is a great coach. They're going to throw some junk defenses at Duke. But, Barrett is really good. K Cam Reddish can be really good. Jones can hit the occasional shot. He's a pretty solid point guard. I think Duke's going to win. I think, and the advantage of having played Virginia Tech, I think that's a bigger advantage for Duke than it is for Virginia Tech.
Michael Huger in The Athletic. One game left to pick. 2-seed Kentucky, 3-seed Houston. Don't sleep on the Cougars.
No, extremely well-coached team. Kelvin Sampson, not everybody likes Kelvin Sampson. He's had some history with the NCAA, obviously. But Kentucky is vulnerable. Washington doesn't play. I mean, Houston is a team that they remind me a lot of those old Cincinnati teams under Huggins. These dudes are, maybe they're not 6'10", 6'11", but they're 6'8", they're athletic, they're physical. They're not afraid to be physical with you. They're a veteran team, which is obviously something Kentucky isn't, other than Reed Travis. So, and I'll be honest, if there's a one or two seed that's most in danger of losing in the Sweet 16 round, I think it's Kentucky. Okay. I think Houston can take these guys down. In fact, I think they will take these guys down. And I think Houston's toughness and physicality is going to wear on Kentucky. And that's going to be the ultimate undoing of Kentucky, Houston's physical nature and, frankly, physical maturity.
Okay. Michael Huger, The Athletic. So we're down to eight teams. Just quickly, because I got to get to some other things with you. Gonzaga-Purdue, if you had to give me a ballpoint, who do you like in that one?
I think Gonzaga's coming out of the West. I think Virginia's coming out of the South. I'm going to go with Michigan State in the East, and I'm going to go with North Carolina in the Midwest.
Wow. Okay.
And I think the final, I'm not sure who the final is going to be yet.
That's okay. Let's leave it at that.
I think Gonzaga, you know, I picked Texas Tech before the tournament to come out of this region, but I think Gonzaga, let's put it this way, if Gonzaga can beat FSU, they can handle Texas Tech.
Gotcha. Michael Huger in The Athletic. A lot of coaching jobs out there. Avery Johnson, fired from Alabama. Bryce Drew, fired from Vandy. We know the Texas A&M job is open. We know UCLA is open. There's a lot of gigs out there. The SEC's getting serious about this basketball, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's for so long, and you and I have been talking about this for a decade, basketball was always a solid, okay, it's important, but let's get serious. It's really not that important. But I think now you're seeing, it's becoming a bigger and bigger deal. Arkansas gets rid of Mike Anderson. You know, Billy Kennedy took the Texas A&M to the Sweet 16 two of the last 4 years, and they still fired him. So, yeah, basketball is becoming more and more serious in the SEC. I think a lot of folks at Alabama thought, oh, we're going to get Steve Prohm, no problem. And then Prohm ends up staying at Iowa State, so that's going to be an interesting coaching search. The Arkansas coaching search is interesting. I think Arkansas is of the SEC jobs that are open right now, I think Arkansas is the best one. I think Texas A&M is quite confident it's going to get Buzz Williams to come, quote-unquote, home. But I still think Arkansas, given their history, given their fan base, really nice arena, I think that job is a good one. I know it's been a long time since Arkansas truly was good, but I still think Arkansas is the best open SEC job right now.
The SEC is a lot better when they're calling the Hogs at Bud Walton Arena. They're a lot better. Michael Huganen, you are phenomenal, as always. You get it. You just know your stuff, and we greatly appreciate it. Next week, we'll talk about the Final Four. How about that?
Excellent. Thanks, man. Talk to you next week.
You're the best. Michael Huganen, The Athletic, brought to you by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Brobridge. Frankie, he loves sports. He loves hoops, and he loves the Tigers, the Cajuns, the Saints, the Pelicans, and he's got all kinds of stuff in his store besides all the beverages and all the snacks you could ever imagine and that true soul food deli with all the goodies he's got. Cleanest restrooms, you got to check it out. D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Back to wrap up hour number one next.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holford Show on 103.7 The Game.
2 minutes after the hour. Welcome back. As we wrap up hour number one, set the stage for hour number two. We talked about the NFL rule change that Sean Payton spearheaded. Kind of lost in all that was the acquisition of free agent tight end Jared Cook from the Oakland Raiders. He had 68 receptions for 896 yards and 6 touchdowns last year, averaging 13.2 yards per reception and a catch percentage of 67.3%. So feed him the ball. Feed him the ball. Speaking of quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts is confident in his move to Oklahoma because he says, "I'm not your average Joe. I'm kind of built for these kind of situations." And you got to believe it, the way he handled himself at Alabama, that he's going to be just fine with the Sooners. You just don't you feel like it? Just got an idea that he's going to be okay. LSU football continues their spring practice. A beautiful day out there on the Ponderosa. Ed Orgeron had some things to say in his post-practice press conference. The thing that caught my eye, he said that the offense is really looking good. He said, quote, "It's as spread of an offense as we've ever had," and he described it as the offense I wanted to see. The combination of Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady, according to Ed Orgeron, has been fantastic. He also made a comment on Miles Brennan. "I want to play him. He needs some experience." You darn right he does. So in some of these games early on that you're going to cruise through, get him in there in the second half and let him play. The defense, according to those there, won the short yardage segment of Saturday's scrimmage, but the offense threw the ball very well. Coach O said wide receivers Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson were excellent. He said that cornerback Kerry Vincent hasn't missed a beat. He's doing football and track. It takes a toll, but he has handled both of them very well. Coach O also said he's taking a wait-and-see attitude on suspended offensive lineman Ed Ingram, who has been around and looks in good shape. All these coming from Jim Kleinpeter, who is sharing this with us. And kickoff specialist Avery Atkins has been working with short field goal attempts around 35 yards. They're trying to develop him. I don't think there's any question. We talk about all the things. We never talk about special teams, and we never talk about how effective Cole Tracy was and how difficult it will be to replace him. So wait and see. Now, Derek Stingley Jr., according to reports, he is going to be your punt return guy. And he is, as Ed Orgeron said, he is Reggie Bushish. He sees green and he goes and gets after it. Forget about what the play's drawn up. Where he sees green, he's going, and he's really, really good at it. So Derek Stingley will make an impact, obviously, from day one. LSU's softball team is back in action tonight, hosting Nicholls State. They're 28-6 overall, 7-2 in the SEC, and the number 5 ranked team in the country. They're coming off 6 straight wins, including a sweep of Georgia in Athens over the weekend. The first sweep for the Tigers in that city since 2001. And at 7-2, though, they're currently in third place in the SEC, just to show you how tough that place is. So, hour number one is history. Coming up, hour number two, can't wait to talk with my old teammate, Lionel Tree Green. If you're from New Iberia, you know who I'm talking about. The Tree, he was special. And Grant Hughes on who is the MVP and who is the rookie of the year in the NBA. It's all coming your way, hour number two. Stick around. We'll be right back on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy right there in Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. The new, improved, renovated Hooters. Great food, great sights, TVs everywhere. Go watch the NCAA tournament. Hooters just makes you happy. $15 for 15 wings and a pitcher of domestic beer. You can't beat it with a stick, and it's every day at Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Without further ado, we do it every day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, we got a lot on the table, a lot on the plate. Let's get busy. CD, fire at will.
Well, hello, Jordy. Good afternoon. It is a pretty nice Wednesday outside, to say the least. Yes. And I think that's a big reason why is because DPI and OPI, they are now subject to review, Jordy. Of course, to a Saints fan, it's a great thing. But I really just want to talk about, could this wind up affecting the pace of the game and it winds up slowing down a little bit more? Or do we see not as many egregiously bad attempts at him, pass interference calls by the referees?
I think the latter rather than the former. I don't think it's going to slow it down. I really don't. I think it's going to get better. But like anything else, it's a trial and error thing. They're going to have to figure out, you know, these cameras can pick up everything now. So yep. Coach has to be prudent. He has to understand what's going on. And so let's just see. I'm all for getting it right. Saints should have been in the Super Bowl. So dadgummit. Let's get it right.
And, you know, Jordy, you were talking at the beginning of the show about who wound up being the one person who voted against it. I want you to take one wild guess as to who it is.
It's got to be the owner of the, well, I was going to say the Rams, but that would be too obvious since they benefited off the call. Is it Robert Kraft and the Patriots?
No, it's not, Jordy. It's actually nobody who was involved in the Super Bowl. For what it's worth, I think the Rams could have a case based off of that Brandon Cooks.
Don't tell me it's Atlanta.
No, Jordy, it's the Cincinnati Bengals. Their head coach has actually been a longtime person who has just been strongly against the replay system in general, Jordy. Are you surprised at that? The Bengals owner.
They're irrelevant. Cleveland's passed them up. They're trying to do anything to get attention, so the owner's going to be the only one to not vote for it. So, no, they're irrelevant. Goodbye, Cincinnati. See you later.
Goodbye, goodbye. Maybe you can go to the AA. Oh, wait, Jordy, the AAF.
No, they're gone, too.
Could be folding after just one season unless the NFLPA helps out. How much is Vince McMahon licking his chops right about now?
Oh, my goodness.
Because he's going to be, he could very well be alone in that spring football slot for the XFL 2020, Jordy. You don't have time to kind of get things going. And we know he's got plenty of funds. So that could wind up being a big thing for the XFL, and if the AAF doesn't get help from the NFLPA.
Well, unsigned NFL players, including practice squad players, are free to join the AAF at any time, but they would need the NFL Players Association's cooperation to get practice squad players who are currently signed to a futures contract with an NFL team. And they're saying, if we're going to be a developmental league, you got to let us develop players. So I understand both. I just don't know how that's going to help the AAF. Unless they're just looking for money. They're looking for funding from the NFL. And the owners aren't going to give that money away. There's no way on God's green earth. So see you later, AAF. I'm sorry. Bye-bye.
And they'll just gladly take all the rules that the AAF decided to start using, with the exception, Jordy, of their onside kick idea. While revolutionary, the NFL decided to table a lot of the overtime talk up until May, including Andy Reid's weird thing where he wants to have at least each team get one possession, regardless if the other team scores a touchdown or not, which I'm like, come on, man. You lost. You screwed yourself over by not having Tony Romo, your defensive coordinator.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see.
Exactly. And speaking of Tony Romo, Jordy.
$10 million.
$10 million. I kind of tabled that to talk about it tomorrow because we had a lot more to talk about yesterday on Hot Topics.
Okay.
But why not talk about Tony Romo? $10 million a year. Is the man worth it?
No. Heck no.
He definitely wasn't worth it as a quarterback.
No, if you can get it, that's John Madden money. And everybody's Boom. High on him. So we'll see. But you know what? There's that Monday Night Football booth that's available still. So maybe he's doing like Conor McGregor is. He's negotiating a contract and waiting to see who's going to be the sucker that falls for it. We'll see.
I mean, you can about imagine the mothership would love to have Tony Romo be that color commentator. He's a lot better than his former teammate Jason Witten, who had to go back to the gridiron.
But it
makes you wonder, Jordy, $10 million, is it worth it for the 49er Network and also ABC,
no.
Disney, and everywhere in between to throw all that money around, even though nowadays it seems like Disney owns everything?
Yeah, they do. I don't know what their balance sheet says. I don't know what they can afford. I'm sure they could do that. I see where they've hired Peyton Manning to do a series where he's going to go around and talk with all the former legends of the game and do something there. Is that the precursor to an announcement that he's going into the Monday night booth? I don't know. Let's wait and see.
It's going to
be interesting.
Oh, it really will be, Jordy. And I just saw this pop up. I don't want to get your reaction of it. LSU football just put out kind of their home slate of what's going on each particular home game they have this year, obviously. Uh-huh. The purple game will be against Northwestern State.
Na, 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 na.
And then, go Jordy,
Gators.
Homecoming up against the Florida Gators. How awesome is that? The first time we have them back in what seems like 20 years.
Yes.
They're back inside Tiger Stadium, and it's a homecoming game.
I think Florida is coming very, very close to Alabama for the team that LSU fans dislike the most. I really believe that. It's Alabama's clear-cut number one because of Saban and all that. But Florida, across the board, like football, they beat us in basketball a couple of times. They beat us in baseball. Bring them all. I like that it's a big game for homecoming. I hate those rent-a-wins for homecoming. Let's make it a big game. Let's get that crowd juiced up and ready to go. Yes.
I really think they're jacked up, Jordy. But I got about 30 seconds left. Give me your thoughts. The most intriguing Sweet 16 match not involving LSU.
Ooh, I tell you what, Houston, Kentucky is going to be a good one. Don't sleep on the Cougars.
You can't.
Just don't. Yeah, I think that's going to be a good one. I really do. Thank you, CD. We got a busy second part of the show coming up. Tree Green, Grant Hughes, looking forward to that. Of course, Hot Topics always brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. From New Iberia to LSU to the Jordy Helfrich Show, Tree Green next. And we welcome you back, and we continue our NCAA tournament memories. We've had people like Ethan Martin and Howard Carter on, Rudy Macklin, Dwayne Scales from back in the day. And now we go to one of my all-time favorite teammates and friends. He was had 1 year under his belt at LSU when myself and Rudy Macklin and Greg Gook came in from the lovely city of New Iberia, Louisiana. Lionel Tree Green, kind enough to join us. Tree, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am terrific, man. I'm terrific. What is this time of year? I still get a little, giddy up in my step, and my wrist starts to flick a little bit because it's tournament time. It brings back some great memories for us.
It certainly does, man. And, I don't care how long you've been away from the game. Comes tournament time, it's just something that, kind of rises up in you, especially if you've experienced the NCAAs.
Yes.
If you've been to it, man, it's just something about you. You get excited about it. And I guess you know, there are moments where you have little flashbacks.
Yes.
you come back to reality and let me go back on the couch and sit down, you know.
Yeah, those days are long gone, man, long gone.
Long
take me
gone.
Back. Take me back to New Iberia. When did basketball get into your blood?
Well, as soon as I could, you know, I was really, I enjoyed football more.
Okay.
I did. And I got into an accident. I got hit on a bicycle one night. And strange thing, I was off. I wasn't allowed to walk for about 6 or 7 weeks.
Huh.
So 6 or 7 weeks, I was in the bed. You know, I torn knee ligaments and all that.
Yeah.
So when I got up, that was the summer going into my freshman year, I grew about 6 inches.
Wow.
And, you know, if from there, you know, I went out for the freshman team and didn't make it. And pretty much gave up on it, you know, in some senses. And then the coach in my sophomore year, he came up and said, come on, I want you to come out. You know, I said, all right, I'll come out. And the rest was history, you know.
Wow.
I enjoyed it. I grew. And I guess my coordination kind of caught up with my growth spurt. And everything else was pretty much elementary from me, you know.
What was Dale Brown selling picks to you to get you to come to LSU?
It wasn't so much his pitch. I wanted to compete in the SEC.
Okay.
The SEC was it was a great conference, man. I always looked for competition. You know, it was something about the neighborhood I grew up in. We always wanted to play against the better players. You know, you always look for the best players, and that's how you get better. And the SEC was great at that time, man. You had Rick Grovey, Mike Phillips, Jack Givens, James Lee. Guys like Jackie Dorsey, man, you had great players
in the league. Tough.
Yeah, LaVon Mercer. You go to Alabama, you had Tiara Dunn and
Leon Douglas.
Douglas, you remember him?
Yes, I do. Reginald King. Yes, I remember
Reginald
them
King,
all.
Right. And at Tennessee, you know, you had
Ernie and Bernie. Yes,
right.
Yes.
So SEC loaded with competition. And, you know, I knew I was going to get some playing time because of that kind of competition, man, you know. That's what really threw it there.
How did it feel? Because you, whether you wanted to or not, you became kind of the father figure to us when we all showed up, Macklin, Cook, and myself. And then all of a sudden the next year we had Martin and Sims and Scales. But
you were
the guy. For some reason, you were the ultimate leader when we first got there, and you kind of took us under your wing.
Well, I think I really didn't have any choice because everybody he signed from that class that I came in 1975 and 76, I was the only player to return.
Yeah.
And, you know, all those guys left, man. You know, he kind of cleaned house. You know, it was kind of rough year because we had some problems on the team with dissension and stuff like that. So he cleaned house, and so I came from a program in high school that, you know, it was team first, always.
Right.
And so it was easy then for me to pick up that kind of role, and because I hated losing. You know, the only losing season I ever had in basketball was my freshman year at LSU. We had a losing season. I had never had a losing season, man. Losing.
And what?
that was unheard of, you know. And so, you know, and so it was easy because I knew. But I also knew that you guys were very talented, man. You know, we came in, you guys came in with a really good crop of guys, man. I mean, you had some players, and I knew the competition was better.
Yeah.
Practice would be better. And, you know, we had a better chance of winning some games.
No question. Lionel Tree Green, kind enough to join us. So we fast forward, and 40 years ago this Friday, LSU will play Michigan State for the second time in school history. We were there at Market Square Arena. You got to guard Irvin Magic Johnson. Tell me your thoughts 40 years later.
It wasn't very difficult because I knew I enjoyed defense. I did. I loved it. You know, that was my part, my contribution to the team. And with Magic at that time, one thing I knew, he was not quicker than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have a jump shot then.
Yep.
So that gave me some options on how it was going to beam up. I was willing to give him some room and maybe let him take a jump shot as opposed to letting him get around me and dishing off to somebody for an easy layup. You know, so the problem with him was not very bad at all. You know, in fact, I enjoyed playing him, you know, played him pretty tight and, you know, gave him a good match. Although they won the game, they had a pretty good team, you know.
And if you sneezed on Magic, they put him on the free throw line. Come on now, you know that.
Well, you know, that was true, too, and I really didn't mind, you know, because, every good defender, you know, you got to get one or two real good fouls.
That's right.
And so you can have those. And if you take one early, you know, they kind of give you a break, you know, a little bit, I think. And so, but we had a great team. I felt good about the team we brought in to play then.
Yeah.
You know, we had a very good team. We had a very good team.
No question. Lionel Tree Green. So when you came to LSU, not so good, but it got better and better and better, and nobody left early like they do now, so we were all there together, and the crowds got to know us, we got to know them, and it was a magical time in LSU basketball history.
Without a doubt. By the time I left LSU in 79, Jody, it was just a wonderful place to play. The program, I thought, had reached a level where it was recognized all over the nation, man. We had, you know, we had some great games, man. You know, we went into Rupp Arena and won twice, you know. Yeah. Man, you know, that was big, man.
It wasn't easy, but it was big.
That's right. You know, to get in and go in Rupp Arena, man, and come out of there with a victory, man, that was, that was the highlight of my life, man. And shut that crowd up at Rupp Arena because they were difficult, man. They were hard, you know. They talk about your mama and stuff, man. You know, they were cruel, man. A lady was talking about my mother one day, man, at Rupp Arena. I said, man, you don't even know my mom, man.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Let's fast forward to today. What do you think of this LSU basketball team?
I love them. They are great rebounders, man. And you know how we felt. You know, I played with some great rebounders, Rudy and Greg Cook, Dwayne Scales, Monster. You know, we had great. And if you have great rebounders, you're always in the game, because if you're not shooting the ball well, you will get second shots because you're on the glass.
Yep.
And when you dominate the glass, you have a good chance of dominating the game. You know, if you can dominate them on the backboard, you'll always have an edge in the game. And I think that's the key to this team. And they've got good guard play up front, you know, with Blaze and Waters. They do a great job, man. They do a great job. And the coaching, you know, it's been great, man. You know, so I like this team, man. I think they're going to get revenge for me 40 years later for losing to Michigan State. I'm praying I'm going to send up an extra prayer.
Michigan State. Speaking of which, let's tell people post-basketball what Lionel Green is doing these days. I think people will find it fascinating.
Well, I worked at UPS for 30 years. I went in September of man, it's been so long ago, I forgot, but I retired about, I retired from them in 2012.
Okay.
And so I've been retired now for the last 7-8 years, but I've been pastoring, I've been preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ for the last 25 years. And I pastor a church here in Baton Rouge, and I pastor another church down in Labadyville, Louisiana. In fact, it's a story within itself, because the church in Labadyville is the church that I was married in.
Wow.
And when I was married in that church, I was Catholic. And at the wedding, the preacher who was there, the old man, said, you know, boy, he always called me a boy. He said, you know, boy, one day you're going to pastor this church. And I looked at him and I said, this guy must be crazy, man. It's about me pastoring church, you know. And look what happened. 30 years, almost 30 years to the day, that he told me that, I replaced him as the pastor of that church.
Wow.
Almost 30 years to the day.
It does not surprise me. You were a leader of us when we were young, and you took us through a maze and myriad of things in college life, and now you're leading people again. It does not surprise me. in any way, shape, or form. You were – look, I know you love to rebound, but every now and then you want to be a guard, man. You want to bring the ball down the court and shoot from the corner. So I don't want to hear all that rebounding stuff.
Look, every big man has that dream until a coach throw you on the bench for trying to handle the ball and bring it up the court, man. Until he bitches you, man, you just leave it alone, you know. You leave it alone. So, let me throw this at you. We always talk about shooters, but I remember we were down one game, and you came in and hit about 7 jump shots in a row, and it may have been against Georgia.
I think it was at Auburn, to be quite honest with you.
At Auburn. You're right. You're right. At Auburn. Yeah. And
you liked me then. You liked me then, Tree. See?
Oh, yeah.
You liked me then. When I'm missing those shots, you didn't like me.
Look, let me tell you something, man. I always had a great love for what you did. You know,
vice versa.
Right, you know, and I always, I tell you this too, I loved your parents, man. They were always so kind and nice, man. You know, your dad, he was always so cool, and, you know, I remember those days, man. You know, he would always come in, and, you know, he was always so kind and humble, man, and I never forgot him, and, you know, so I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you. But you're the best.
I wish you would have let me handle the ball just a little
bit. Indeed. I had to get my minutes. Stop it. Lionel Tree Green, I love you. I love you like a brother. You're the best. Thank you for spending some time with us, and look, it ain't going to hurt to say an extra prayer or two, okay?
Hey, I promise you, I already did. I did this morning, and I will the next couple of days, and I believe the Tigers will pull it out.
Tree, thank you, man. God bless you.
Thank you, Jordy. Good talking to you.
You take care. Lionel Tree Green. We'll take a timeout. We'll continue here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. Yes, we're almost through the marathon of the regular season, and I can smell the playoffs right around the corner in the NBA, and I cannot wait for that. Grant Hughes is our NBA analyst, and he does such a wonderful job for Bleacher Report. He's a lawyer as well, so we have a smart man that comes on whenever we ask of him, and we greatly appreciate it. Grant, I mean, how would you, I guess, first off, thank you again, and how would you sum up this season of the NBA? Can you sum it up for us?
Man, I don't know. Where do you start? You know, the LeBron James angle and the Lakers failure is a big storyline. Something I was thinking about just big picture-wise, though, is, and I'm sure we'll talk about MVP at some point, it's kind of interesting to me that you look at Giannis and you look at Harden, who are the two top candidates, and like those two guys, Giannis has the most unassisted dunks we've seen in like 20-something years. Harden has the most unassisted threes we've seen in ever, basically. and it's like this is a team game, right, where systems win and the Warriors rack up all these assists, and, you know, that's why they're great. And all the, you know, the Spurs, the beautiful game, you know, a few years ago – you've got these two guys just doing everything for themselves, and they're going to be the top two MVP candidates. And I just wonder if the game is changing in that way, where it's going to be more of an individual style, or if, you know, these guys are just outliers, which is obviously true to some degree, but it's kind of an interesting, you know, big picture NBA thing.
Sure.
But, it, you know, there's a million good storylines this year, really.
No question. But because that was my first question. You mentioned that about their individual exploits, but I think the general public looks at Giannis and goes, man, he plays on a team, and they share the ball, they do things, whereas Harden, it's bounce, 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 step back three, bounce, 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 get to the free throw line, dribble, 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 all that stuff. Does the style of play, is that going to hurt his chances this year, just the style of play? Because it's no fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. I totally agree. I mean, I don't enjoy watching the Rockets for that reason. It's just the same thing every time down, basically. And it just depends on how the defense, you know, what gimmicks they break out. And the Bucks had some good ones last night against the Rockets. But I also think it helps just because, I mean, you can't convince me there's anyone else that could be this efficient with the incredible workload Harden's had to carry this year. We've never seen a guy where a step back contested three is a good shot. You know, Steph Curry comes close, but Steph Curry just doesn't shoot that shot.
Right.
It blows me away that we have someone that is capable of just being an offense by himself to this degree. Because the Rockets' offense as a team is great, and it's because of Harden. Because, I mean, other than Chris Paul, nobody creates anything on that whole roster. So, yeah, it's ugly, but I mean, it works, and that's the amazing thing.
We'll see if it's going to work in the playoffs. But normally the MVP goes to the best player on a team that's really, really good, whereas the rookie of the year is normally a guy that is playing on a terrible team and puts up big numbers. So rookie of the year, is that a two-horse race as well?
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of surprising that it is a two-horse race now because for, what, you know, four-plus months of the year, it was Luka Doncic, hands down, no question. I'd still give it to him just because, you know, Trae Young's first three-plus months, those still count, right, when he was shooting 20-something percent from three all this other stuff. So I like Doncic, but it is a close question. And, I mean, if momentum counts for anything, I mean, Young's got it now in a big way. He's just putting up these 30-10 games, the most since Oscar Robertson as a rookie. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, the league is good. I thought about it, and I was getting ready to talk to you. There's a group of super sophomores out there too. Ben Simmons, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum. I think you have to add De'Aaron Fox of the Sacramento Kings into that mix as well. Those are four really, really good second-year players. Who do you want? If you're building a team, which one of those players do you want to start off with?
Oh, man. That's tough. I mean, you know, if you asked me this last year when Jason Tatum was going nuts in the playoffs, it would have been a tougher question. For me, I think Ben Simmons' shooting concerns me long term. I just don't think he's ever going to be a guy that has a jump shot.
I agree.
So it's between Fox and Mitchell for me. And, you know, it's weird. I think Fox made such a leap this year. He's so much improved. And I think I probably watch him the most just because of I live near the Kings. And, you know, the way that he runs a team, I mean, I can't remember a 21-year-old guy that is so clearly the leader of a team. And that they're going to be around 500 this year. He's probably the fastest guy end-to-end in the league. He has amazing vision. He's got another level to go, I think. So I might pick Fox, which, you know, Simmons is so productive. It's hard to do that, but I just like everything about Fox. You know, we get into the, you know, stuff like makeup and character and all that stuff that, you know, talent still matters more, but Fox really checks every single box, if you're around him much. And so I think if I had to bet on someone to be, you know, a leader of a consistent playoff team, it might be him. I think it really might be Fox.
Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, NBA feature writer. You're a basketball junkie. I know you're watching these NCAA tournament games. Zion, when you look at him and you equate his game now to the more wide-open NBA game, what do you see out of him?
Man, I mean, I see something that I don't know if we've seen before, right?
Yeah.
It's just a guy that size, you know, you get the Larry Johnson comparison, which – I guess. I mean, but Zion is just so much more. I mean, Larry Johnson was athletic at UNLV.
Not like this guy.
Not like this. We've never seen a guy this size, this fast. The way he elevates just never looks real to me. He takes these 2-foot plants from, you know, way outside the lane, and he just suddenly he's dunking. I don't know what to make of him. I think, you know, the jump shot's going to matter. But you look, if you imagine him in a system like Giannis has in Milwaukee where the floor is safe. And he's just got to beat a guy one-on-one. I don't know what you do with him.
I don't know who you guard him with. It just depends on the coach and the style of play, and you're right. I'm curious as your thoughts on Ja Morant, the guard from Murray State.
I mean, he's got to be the second pick now, right? I don't know. The dunk he had, I forget who it was against, but it was a vintage Derrick Rose dunk where he just kind of was cutting off of the left wing and elevated two hands over the defender. He's quick. I think he's smart. I think, you know, if he's going to be a really dynamite, like, impact guy, the three off the dribble has got to fall really consistently for him. Yeah. And as he gets stronger, it's going to help. I think he's a little slight still, but I mean, I like him a ton. The rest of the Duke guys that are up there in the projected, you know, top tiers of the draft, I don't like any of them nearly as much as Morant.
No, I'm with you. I got to tell you what, now, I don't know if this is by design or not. I've never seen a player play no defense like he does. Now, he'll go for a steal, but, I mean, he won't even sniff the other end of the court.
Let's hope that that's just picking his spots in college. Let's hope that's what it is.
I think he's more valuable on the court than picking up some fouls. I'm with you. Is this the season – is this going to become more the norm for LeBron James, or is this just an anomaly, this season that he's had?
It's pretty hard to call it an anomaly at this age, right? I mean, just because, you know, he's defied aging better than anyone really we've ever seen. And, you know, it comes for everybody. I do hesitate a little bit because, you know, I wonder if they'd put a better team around him if he hadn't missed those games with the groin injury. And, you know, I think if he hadn't missed those games, the most he's ever missed in a season, the Lakers probably would be a playoff team or really, really close to it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I wonder how we'd look at it differently if that were the case. But, you know, getting hurt is part of aging. And so maybe we factor in 20 games missed every year for him now. His time is over. And I mean, I don't say that mean-spiritedly. It ends for everybody. But I think we should expect – We should expect that now LeBron needs help, where before you just put a few shooters around him and your offense was top five, no questions asked. But I don't think we can expect that anymore.
Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, kind enough to join us. Aren't the Celtics pretty – I mean, they're pretty smart, I think. They're hanging around in the fifth playoff spot. They're going to take on the Indiana Pacers, who doesn't have their best player in Victor Oladipo. I mean – I'd rather play Indiana than, say, a Brooklyn team. I don't know why. Tell me I'm crazy, but, I mean, I think Boston's sitting pretty sweet for the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I think – I mean, I don't know how much they want to be where they are because you just watch some of their games and they're so disjointed. And Kyrie Irving is – I just don't know if he's a guy I want leading my team. You know, defensively they've slipped. They're under 500 since the All-Star break. There's a lot of real – issues with the team. But yeah, I think if I were them though, I probably would want to get into that, you know, that two or three spot, which is very unlikely now. They're way out of there. Cause then at least you duck, the Bucks in the second round and, you know, that may be a big difference, but I mean, really you're going to have a tough first round matchup and you might get bounced by, say, you know, it's tricky. I think for me, the big issue with Boston is, they really haven't figured out what kind of team they are, and we have 2 weeks left in the season. So I'm a little concerned for them in the playoffs, not necessarily against the Pacers, but you know, getting out of the second round is going to be tough for them, I think.
There's a little bit of a race. I mean, you got Detroit at 7, Orlando 8, Miami, Charlotte. There's only two games separating those four teams, 2.5 if you want to get to Brooklyn at 6. Who do you think ends up getting in and who gets bumped out in the East, in your opinion?
I mean, if you'd asked me a week ago, my answer would have been totally different. But the Magic have won 6 in a row, and the Hornets have won 4 in a row. And so now the big thing was when Orlando beat Miami either last night or the night before, they took over the 8th spot, and they got the tiebreaker against the Heat. So the Heat have an uphill climb now. They've got to beat Orlando by at least a half a game. They can't tie them or they don't get in. Right. I'm still skeptical of Charlotte, even though they're hot. I think Orlando's pretty young. If I had to pick, I'd put Miami back in there you know, they're half game out now. But, you know, I mean, let's really pull the curtain back. None of these teams are any good. None of these teams are going to do anything. So, it's just, you know, you can tell your season ticket holders you got a playoff trip.
Yeah, the West just completely different. I mean, you've got the 8 teams that are in it. There's no way Sacramento's going to make up 5.5 games on San Antonio this late in the season. So the Spurs are at number 8 right now. Oklahoma City at number 7. I still can't figure out the Thunder. I just don't figure them out.
Yeah, I mean, they were a team that for at least the first half of the season was defined by its defense. I mean, they were up there in the top two or three. They were number one for a while there, but they're below average really over the last couple of months. And so now it's how many shots is Paul George going to make, and how much is Russell Westbrook going to kill you with his shot selection and his low efficiency? And they can't really lean on that great defense anymore. I think if you're the Thunder, though, the good news is right now you're looking at the Nuggets in the first round. And as good as the Nuggets are, you know, this is their first playoff trip. And we're going to see, you know, what a bunch of, you know, the Nuggets are led by guys that are, you know, 22, 23 and younger, other than Paul Millsap. So what are they going to do in the playoff? How are they going to react? I think if you're the Thunder, that's your best case scenario, because I don't think you're going to get the Blazers now, who are missing two of their three best players after Nurkic is done for the year. I could see, I don't have a lot of faith in the Thunder, but if they get that right matchup, they could at least, you know, put up a fight against a higher seed.
Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report. Can the goal, am I concerned about the Golden State Warriors? They're 6-4 their last 10. Are they just, are they going through the motions? Can they flip that switch immediately in the playoffs and become that dominant team again?
I think, I mean, they'll be better than this. I feel pretty good about saying that. I think they will flip the switch. I do think, though, that when that switch gets flipped, there just isn't quite as much juice as there used to be. You know, Draymond Green has taken a step back. He was always a guy that was going to age poorly because he's not that big and he's not that athletic. You know, DeMarcus Cousins, I don't think, is going to be a helpful playoff weapon. So you're looking at Kevon Looney and, I mean, you know, Jordan Bell and Andrew Bogut playing a lot of the five. So there's real weaknesses there. I just think that, you know, the rest of the West has their problems too. Nobody's as experienced in big games as the Warriors are. All those playoff cliches and the switch flipping, I think, you know, they're still my favorite. But yeah, they're not quite the same.
Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, NBA feature writer. And I think we just lost him. But that's live radio, folks. It just happens when you're going from the Central Time Zone to the Pacific Time Zone. But you get it in a nutshell. We're just, you know, we're 7 day games away for most teams for ending the marathon of the regular season. And then things are ramped up come playoff time. I still think it's going to be the Rockets versus the Warriors in the West at some point in time. And the East, God, your guess is as good as mine. Milwaukee, Toronto, Philly, all will be in the mix. I'm still not dead in the water with the Boston Celtics, but the playoffs, they will be special. All right, we'll take a timeout here. We'll come back. We'll wrap this baby up. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station. We really are. Numbers don't lie. All right, fun show. Hope you enjoyed it half as much as we did bringing it to you. Love me some Tree Green. Grant Hughes, always good. Huguenin, best. And enjoyed our conversation with Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press. You know what else I enjoy? The new renovated Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. It is just phenomenal. Phenomenal. It is new. It is fresh. It is just... It's a great place to go watch. You got four games on Thursday night, four games on Friday night. Go watch some hoops at Hooters. I mean, gee whiz, $15 gets you 15 wings and a big old pitcher of domestic beer. It's every day at Hooters. Go check it out. The new improved Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. You're going to have a blast because Hooters just makes you happy. It really, really does. All right, let's go to our daily history lesson, because it was on this day, March 27th, the year 2017. A group including former L.A. Laker, former Michigan Stater Magic Johnson, and longtime baseball executive Stan Kasten made his mark with the Atlanta Braves. They agreed to buy the Los Angeles Dodgers from Frank McCourt for a record $2 billion, with a B, billion dollars. The Lakers sold to an organization led by Magic Johnson and Stan Kasten. On this day, March 27th, the year 2017. Dodgers are pretty good, and they're making money. They got the TV rights, and oh, they're making money. Yes, indeed. All right, birthday wishes. If today, March 27th, is your special day, all of us under the Delta Media umbrella wish you the very best day. Cake, ice cream, all that fun stuff. Presents. You share your day with happy 55th to Quentin Tarantino, producer extraordinaire. Happy 48th birthday to Mariah Carey. And happy 43rd birthday, Fergalicious. Fergie, celebrating a birthday today as well. So if it's your anniversary, man, special day. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Go out and treat her like the queen that she is. Absolutely. So happy anniversary. All right. So tomorrow, Thursday, LSU opens up against Mississippi State. That game right here on 103.7 The Game. Friday, LSU versus Michigan State in basketball. 6:09 tip. That game right here on 103.7 The Game. Then we'll switch back to baseball on Saturday for the last game of the LSU-Mississippi State Series. So we got you covered from top to bottom here on your source for LSU sports, and that is 103.7 The Game. Plain and simple. I don't know. We'll get another LSU player on. I'm efforting to get Magic Johnson on. I sent out the request. I'm just waiting. Irvin, help me out, brother. Come on. Let's do it. If I can't get Irvin, I'll take Greg Kelser. I'll take him too. Either one. But we'll figure it all out. We'll go live to Starkville and we'll have some fun. CD, job well done as always, my friend, as always. And I love your hot topics. That's awesome. Again, Sean Payton. You the man. You got it done. You lost the battle, but you won the war. You really did. We're getting closer and closer to the spring game for LSU football. And, golly, gymnastics is really good. Softball's really good. Basketball. Come on, baby. It's payback time from 1979. It is payback time. 40 years later, LSU's due its turn. It's due its turn. We got to wait till Friday. I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try. All right. Thanks to all of you for listening in. We greatly appreciate it. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. CD, you're the producer extraordinaire. We greatly appreciate your efforts as well. We have only one Wednesday, March 27th. Man, have a great rest of your afternoon and evening. And come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m., same great station, 103.7 The Game, and around the world on 103.7thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.